Hello, beautiful humans. I'm Tymy Castle.
And I'm Benjamin Mead.
And you're listening to Just a Minute. Just a Minute is an educational podcast where we break down justice topics in 30 minutes or less. Today's topic, gender depictions in comics.
Yeah, before we get started, we might need to give a content warning. We're going to be talking about sexual content, using sexually suggestive language, and yes, talking about sexual violence. So listen with caution. This may be less appropriate for some of our younger children listening, if we have.
I don't think we have any kids listening. Given what we're talking about today, definitely not appropriate for younger listeners. Hi, Ben. Hello, everyone.
Yeah, greetings, dear listeners and devoted fans, or as Stan Lee would say, true believers. I think we got a fun one today for yens, and that's another little Appalachian saying, yens. So today we're going to be fighting for your rights in our satin tights and the old red, white, and blue. Wonder Woman. Gender depictions in comics. So, Tymy, did you watch the Linda Carter?
Yes, Wonder Woman show? I do remember watching it as a kid, but the only thing I remember is the spin. So, like, the camera focused so heavily on her lower body, especially when she would spin around. So she would do the spin, and then the lasso. Those are basically the only things I remember.
We're going to talk about gender depictions in comic books today, particularly superheroes. So, did you read comic books? Do you read comic books?
No. I think there was a short period of time in my life when I collected some old monster comic books and the X-Files, which was like one of my favorite television shows.
Yeah. I didn't really either. Like, there were a couple of times where I thought, okay, I'm going to get into comic books. I really love superheroes, but, you know, growing up in Pound, Virginia, there were some barriers to entry. One, like, the continuity kind of always bothered me. So I'd pick one up, and I'm like a completionist. So I would say, like, see this issue for this, you know, story continuation, and I'd be like, I can't, you know, like, I would feel like I would have to read everything. And then
there's no Amazon, so you can't order them all.
Yeah. And there's no comic book store in Pound, Virginia.
Yes.
At least when I was a kid. So I can only get what was on like the grocery store shelf. So, you know, very limited in being able to get into comic books. But anyway, what do you know about the creator of Wonder Woman?
I knew absolutely nothing. And I know absolutely nothing, so tell me.
Well, it's really interesting. So William Moulton Marston is his name, and he created Wonder Woman in like the early 40s, I think, late 30s,
yeah,
early
40s. Yeah, I think 1941 was the first.
Yeah, and he was influenced by science fiction, feminist science fiction, this feminist utopian societies, influenced by Greek mythology as well. But, you know, he was an interesting character in a lot of other ways. So he's credited with creating the blood pressure test. That's a central component of the polygraph.
Interesting.
So a lot of times he's credited as inventing the polygraph, particularly given the fact that Wonder Woman has her lasso of truth, that she can lasso people and they have to tell the truth. He was also in a polyamorous relationship, in a throuple with two women.
Interesting.
And I read that it was actually his wife that kind of gave him the idea for the blood pressure test that she was talking about, how like when she was deceptive, she could like feel her heart racing. And that gave him that, And there's also a rumor that these three people were heavily into bondage.
Yes.
And that's often times credited as like the influence in a lot of early Wonder Woman stories, that there's, you know, all kinds of images of her like being tied up or chained up and
wrists, like the wrist cuffs.
The bondage is related to that. But, as I mentioned, he was, you know, kind of influenced by feminist ideals. And so particularly the first few years of Wonder Woman comic books, she was it was kind of heavily influenced by these ideas of like mentorship and love. She was an ambassador of peace. And instead of like contrasting with like Batman or Superman, who would like beat up the villains and, you know, win through violence or force and then like fly off into the sunset, she would, you know, like tie them up in her lasso of truth and take them to, you know, Reformation prison island or, you know, Reform Island prison, and like stay with them and like mentor them and teach them how to be, you know, how to like be disciplined and how to control themselves and yes. criminal behavior. So it kind of fits with the notion of restorative justice yeah, that we yeah. talked about before, like no exile or no submission through violence, but an emphasis on responsibility and truth and discipline and community and mentorship.
That's so nice.
Yeah. But it didn't take long before she kind of got away from those ideals. And now when we think of Wonder Woman contemporary, she's more of like a warrior
yes.
as opposed to like a collaborator and yes. a mentor. She has a sword. She has a shield instead yes. of like the bracelets for defense
right.
and the lasso
yes.
of truth for restraint. Now she fights with a sword and shield. And she's more of like a, you know, female aggressive punch machine.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. So Wonder Woman was the first superhero, superheroine who was a woman. How mm-hmm. are other female superheroes portrayed in comics?
Well, you mentioned earlier that you were not necessarily the target audience.
No.
And historically, no. that has been adolescent boys. So yes. as you can imagine, depictions of women in comics historically has not been
yeah.
great.
Yeah, yeah.
Comic books, because they're kind of an inferential medium, like drawings and mm-hmm. text, and you have to kind of fill in the blank.
Yes.
A lot of times, just as a technique, comics rely on like stereotypes and exaggeration
yes.
to tell stories. Mm-hmm. And maybe when we think about gender norms to an even greater degree.
Yes.
So female superheroes in comic books often either follow traditional gender norms or roles, or they are are you know, hypersexualized, yeah. objectified, and we're going to talk about both of those. So in terms of like gender norms and roles, first of all, you know, female superheroes, there's a lack of representation there. There's just a whole lot more male superheroes than female superheroes.
Right. Gender parity is an issue.
Yeah. So even if you look at like the, or it's particularly evident in like the super team ups, like mm-hmm. Wonder Woman is the only woman on the Justice League. And if you think about like the Avenger movies, for a long time, Black Widow was right. the only woman on there who ends up, you know, being killed
right.
off.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. And, you know, eventually, you know, Wanda Maximoff, the Scarlet Witch, kind of becomes like the second female team member.
Yes.
Who also ends up dying, and, you know, like becoming the villain and then, you know, killing herself.
Pattern here.
You know, Doctor Strange. But, you know, if you think about like, you know, the MCU,
yes.
it's overwhelmingly male. There yes. is that kind of one, like, gratuitous thing in Avengers Endgame where, like, all of the women
yes.
ride together to attack Thanos, but
yeah.
they're all, like, secondary characters
right.
in their films, like, attached to the right. male lead. So there's just not many
yes.
female superheroes compared to males. And also in terms of gender roles, women who do get to be superheroes in comic books oftentimes, you know, represent values or are associated with roles that are, you know, typically, traditionally, stereotypically associated with women.
Right.
So, for example, you know, you had like those early years of Wonder Woman, good feminist icon. But by the time like World War II rolls around, she was the only member of the Justice Society, and all of the men went off to fight in World War II, and she had to stay behind and be the secretary.
A product of her time.
And take notes. Yeah. And also, female superheroes are oftentimes portrayed as like weaker or smaller
yes.
or more delicate. Obviously, the female superheroes that do have those physical powers, they can't be like bulky and super muscular, because then they wouldn't be like slender and feminine and yeah. sexy. So they, if you know, the ones that do have physical strength
yes.
powers, they have to be like, still have to be like small and feminine, but oftentimes,
and hot.
Yeah. Hot. Obviously yeah. we're going to talk about objectification and sexualization in a moment.
Yes.
But, you know, frequently their superpowers are also like weaker than the men's superpowers. So you have, you know, female superheroes with invisibility,
yes.
and telepathy and weather control.
Storm, one of my favorites.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're going to talk about hypersexuality in a
yes.
in a moment, but female superheroes are oftentimes given what scholars have referred to as strike a pose and point powers. And so it's the idea that, you know,
Vogue.
women have these powers
yes.
where they can get in a sexy pose
yeah.
and point and raise their hands and stick their boobs out and yeah. call down lightning from the sky so
yeah.
that they can use their powers, but they can look sexy and be put in these sexy poses and look like a supermodel while they're
yeah.
using their powers.
Yes.
Batwoman and Batgirl were actually yes. introduced into the comics because people were too scared that Batman and Robin were gay.
Oh, yeah.
So like in the 50s, Batman and Robin, they're too gay. Yes. We've got to have some female love interest for these guys to damp down the criticism.
Gotcha.
So anyway, those are like the traditional gender roles and how women are kind of portrayed in that stereotypical traditional way.
Okay.
On the other hand, women are oftentimes objectified in comics, like treating women and their bodies as objects or things or devices instead of treating them like fully realized humans or characters. And there's lots of examples of like what objectification means from video games. It's really obvious there because you're like, you know, playing in that women are oftentimes treated as like objects. So one of the most egregious examples, like in video games, if you see something green, that's always a cue that it's like health. So you go and you pick up this item and that's health.
Right.
But in one of the Grand Theft Auto games, the way that you replenished your health was to go have sex with prostitutes.
Sex workers. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that's that's objectification. Yeah, it's like they're depicted as just like an item in an environment that you go and use for your own benefit. Have you heard the term fridging?
No, I've not heard this.
Well, I mean, it's a term in like media studies.
Yes.
And you see it all the time.
And I'm surprised I have not heard it because I do media studies, but I haven't heard that.
Yeah, but it's basically when a character, oftentimes female character, is killed, tortured, sexually assaulted, and that serves more as like a motivation or a character arc for the male lead.
Right.
And that term actually came from superhero comics, Green Lantern. There was an issue of Green Lantern where a villain dismembers his girlfriend and puts her in the fridge and like leaves a note on the table like, check the fridge.
Yeah, that's
so
nice.
Yeah. Oftentimes, female superheroes are tortured as kind of like a gratuitous plot device. And one notorious example of that from a very famous comic book, The Killing Joke, which is like the book that really influenced like the Jack Nicholson portrayal of the Joker. Like he falls in a vat of acid. That came from that book, Alan Moore. But in that book, Joker like shoots Batgirl, paralyzes her, strips her, sexually assaults her, and takes photographs in order to like torture Commissioner Gordon and drive him crazy. So that's an example of fridging. Also, women, female superheroes are like sexualized and hyper-sexualized, treated as sex objects to titillate.
Yes.
There's my favorite word again.
Titillate.
Titillate the young, horny teenage boys.
Yes.
So women are drawn in comic books for the male gaze, to be lusted after, to be possessed, to be the fulfillment of sexual fantasies.
Yes.
And they're drawn in exaggerated ways to fulfill those sex fantasies, obviously like very small waist, huge boobs,
a very defined hourglass figure.
So you know, one particular egregious example is Power Girl. She probably has like the biggest boobs of all of the superheroes, but she has like this white costume and it's actually like almost like a turtleneck,
it
like a one-piece bathing suit, but it has this gigantic window cut out to like show her cleavage.
Right.
Totally non-functional.
Yes.
Gratuitous.
And not necessary. Yeah.
But, you know, superhero costumes for women are oftentimes like the bathing suit.
Yes.
Bikini armor, which makes zero sense. But anyway, in terms of objectification, a study done in 2014 found that 95% of comic book issues that included women had objectified pictures of women in the issue.
Shocking.
50% of comic book covers that depicted women, objectified women. And then within the comic books, 25% of images of women's bodies were objectified.
Well, that's lower than what I would have suspected.
Well, the note is, like, this researcher, she went through and coded all of these pictures.
Uh-huh.
And she said to code a picture as gratuitous or objectified, it had to be like super exaggerated. It had to be either like the broke back pose or an unrealistic arched back or like your
cleavage
was like falling out of your clothes. Because she said if it was just like, you know, big boobs and spread legs, then you know,
it would be all of them.
Yeah, there would not be any variation. It would be essentially 100% of everything. So one feminist argument for why female superheroes are so sexualized is to kind of tone down on the threat that a superpowered woman would pose to the patriarchy. So like a super powerful woman might be a threat to gender norms and male domination, but if we can assure our male readers that she's still a sex object and her primary function is still sexually pleasing men, then it's not such a threatening or intimidating idea. What do you think about that argument?
Well, I mean, that's a lot of intention for comic book artists who I feel like they just actually know their audience and they're catering to their audience. But not only do we see powerful women as a threat to hegemonic masculinity, these characters are drawn for the male gaze. Mm-hmm. So there are multiple issues here because you have this issue of gender parity and portrayals, which you mentioned, mm-hmm. but then those still largely objectify women. I just wanted to highlight Jessica Jones as mm-hmm. a contemporary and noted exception because she fights fully clothed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like, if you think about that, you know, Netflix show, like she was a real character. She yes. had her struggles. She was not hypersexualized. She always had on like jeans and actually a jacket too.
A more fully realized person.
She was again a person, not an object.
Right.
Like with real character and real arcs and real struggles and development. But you know, we're talking about like the objectification of women, and some people point to the fact that male superhero bodies aren't drawn realistically either. So men are drawn like super muscly, like you've got like that V-shaped torso, oftentimes like a 10-pack abs, which is not a real thing. Like seriously, I have pictures on my PowerPoint of like, you've got.
I've never seen a 10-pack ab. Yeah. Probably have though in the superhero depiction. Just don't remember.
Like necks wider than your head. Like
that I'm familiar with.
Yeah, so the critique is that. People respond to this idea of objectification of women in comic books by saying like, well, men are drawn unrealistically, so it's not just a woman thing. What do you buy that?
Well, I'm going to be nice in my response. Mm-hmm. No. One study also found that women superheroes are still even described by their physical appearance, not their physical abilities. Mm-hmm. And there's the work of sociologist Katie Gilpatrick, who also did a study and found that even when you have violent female action heroes in movies, they do actually still reinforce gender stereotypes. Mm-hmm. They were violent in typically masculine ways. They were also usually submissive to their male action hero cohorts. They served as love interests and frequently died before the conclusion of the film, as you've pointed out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So no, that doesn't fly.
Yeah. You know, the point is that, you know, when we think about male superhero bodies, instead of being sexual fantasies, they represent power fantasies. These young boys, you know, want to have sex with the women's bodies, but they want to have the men's bodies. So male superheroes and the muscular body often portray this hyper-masculine image of toughness and power and control and violence and force and domination and the excitement of danger and emotions or weakness. So, you know, being a man, being masculine in comic books is about being strong, tough, and physically capable. And when you, you know, sexualize a man in that way, the point is that it like undermines their power and authority. Like if you're a sex object, you're not like a super powerful authority figure. And to really emphasize that point, I read a really interesting article on the super penis or Superman's penis.
Yes.
And actually the lack of it. Like, so when you think about like masculinity, what more like visceral symbol of masculinity is there than like a big wiener?
Yes. There's no, I guess, no other way to say this. But okay. Yeah, no.
But
yeah,
right. Interestingly enough, superheroes, male superheroes, are drawn with no bulge.
This is something I never noticed, by the way, until you pointed this out.
Like, literally, if you go to Google and Google Superman's underwear, you don't even have to go and look for pictures of this. You just Google Superman's underwear, and every picture of him you pull up in his red underwear, he's flat as a flitter in front.
And like, which is, you know, you know, like male models often stuff in order for photos. That's common. So it is striking that there's an absence of anything.
Yeah. And there was even a controversy on the recent like Black Panther movie where they had to CGI reduce Namor's crotch and bulge in that film. But anyway, like that really juxtaposes with like huge TNA for women, like the male superheroes don't have a super penis. So why do you think that's the case?
I have no idea, and I'm not going to speculate.
Well, there are several arguments that this article puts forth. That
I think you talk about this.
One, obviously, we've talked about straight male readers.
Yes,
as
the target audience.
The target audience.
Yes.
So they don't want to look at wieners because that's too gay.
Yes.
For the straight male audience.
Yeah.
Also, I mentioned before the fact that like sexualizing male characters undermines their power.
Yes.
And then also another argument is that there's no super penis because it might induce penis anxiety in young boys. So Superman can't have a small wiener because that would undermine his power.
Right.
But he can't have a huge one either because then that would emasculate our readers and create too much anxiety about the size of their own wiener. And we can't make young boys uncomfortable about their bodies now, can
we? Poor fragile men and their egos.
Yeah. So... I mean, that's an interesting argument.
Yes.
But it's definitely true that if you look at comic books, there are
I had never noticed. Yep. Mm-hmm. But yeah, now that you've brought this up to me, I'm going to go actually look for it.
Yeah. So in my class, I just Googled Superman's underwear, and I have a grid of like the just the first Google pictures that come up, and they're all totally flat.
That is interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So anyway, to wrap up, hopefully things are getting better. The 90s were like the worst time for the depiction of women in comic books. Marvel had their own run of swimsuit editions in comic books.
I would have suspected it was earlier, so I was surprised by that finding.
Yeah, it was really the 90s. But I say things are getting better, but last night I was on Facebook and I follow the superhero news, and Marvel is now doing like a ski bunny
issue.
Yeah, so there was like a picture of Spider-Woman, and she had her ski coveralls pulled down to her waist, and then like a sports bra out on the slopes in the snow, like holding a snowball while she's in a bikini. So anyway, maybe, but you know, there have been some kind of objective analyses that say, like, you know, there are fewer poor depictions of women and more conversations about it now than there were several decades ago. And you mentioned Jessica Jones.
Yes.
The Black Panther movies had good depictions of women.
I love Black Panther, but maybe, again, that's why I'm drawn to those more so than any of the others.
And in the second Black Panther movie, like, the women were centralized. They were the main characters. And Ms. Marvel is another comic and show that's gotten a lot of praise, good storytelling, good representation. So maybe things are getting better. So I guess that means it's our Minute to Spin It, where we each give our 30-second takeaway from the show today. So tie me in just a minute. What's your spin?
Female superhero is not necessarily a feminist superhero. Right. We know through research that these portrayals are harmful to young women, heightening concerns over body image and decreasing self-esteem, and they also result in less egalitarian gender role expectations, so we have a long way to go. Mm-hmm. Ben, what's your spin?
Superman, I can be a fantasy. I can tell you need that big, deep energy.
Should we put this on the podcast?
I didn't say anything wrong. I just said D.
True.
Anyway.
Okay,
we'll give the censors the final say here.
Yeah.
But give Superman a big wiener, for goodness sakes. So, as a consumer of superhero media, it's important to have more superheroes who are women, as you said, but who are also fully realized characters, not caricatures, not objects, not softcore porn, but like, you know, again, imagine Wolverine in a thong bikini showing off his butt cheeks and his chest hair. So if it's too undignified for Wolverine, who's the best there is, bub, it's too undignified for women.
True. This podcast is sponsored by the Gandhi Center at JMU, which relies on support from generous donors like yourselves. If you would like to throw a few bucks to the Gandhi Center to support our educational programming, please click on the link in our show notes. Please visit our website for more information.